Welcome to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips, and I help deeply caring equestrians create emotionally balanced horses with science, empathy, and feel. This podcast is a safe place for anyone who desires a better future for horses and for the equestrian lifestyle. I hope that you will enjoy these solo and collaborative episodes where we enjoy a deep insight into our horses' worlds and ways in which we can make that better for them. If you love horses and are willing to do right by them, you're going to love this podcast. And I thank you for being here. Christiane Witt is the founder of Horse Biz Success. She is a horsewoman of Mustangs and newly a Lusitano, currently living in her home country of Germany after a career as an expat in Los Angeles. Christiane Witt is a business coach for equestrian professionals and a master strategist, teacher, and mentor to equestrian service providers who put the horse first. Christiane has been a mentor to me in various forms since 2019, and I wouldn't be where I am today without her teachings, coaching, and support. I am delighted to introduce her to you today in this wide-ranging and deeply touching conversation. Good morning, Christiane. How are you?
Hello. Hi, Lockie.
I'm so happy to have you here, and thank you for joining me. I'm really, really happy to have you here.
It's going to be great fun to talk to you. We never run out of topics.
Or not. It might be horrible. We'll see. We'll find
out. Okay.
So how would you describe to people who you are, what you do, and how you do it? It's a big question, but we're starting off with a big question.
All right. Well, so through my company, actually somebody here, and so I now live in Germany, and so somebody asked me yesterday in German, and that's, you know, that's not when I have my elevator speech ready. So he said, so what do you do? And I said, well, I make horse pros a lot of money. So he looks at me and goes, okay. So that's actually, you know, a bit of a simplified version. But I couldn't remember how to say in German to make a greater impact. So what we really do with Horse Biz Automated is to help horse first pros make a greater impact and also secure their financial situation to a point where they can have a greater impact. So it's kind of a cycle. Like, it starts off with wanting to make a difference, but also needing the money. And once the money is there, they can make a greater difference.
Wow. And that's who you are. Well, that's more what you do in your business.
What am
but
I?
Who are you, Christiane? Who are you?
Yeah, so this is I love that. Within the business, let's start within the business. Yeah. So I have two partners. They are in their 20s and then their 40s, and then I just turned 60. So it makes for a really nice collaboration where I see myself more like the mentor, the stabilizer, the stress reducer, the strategist. I do like that. So from a professional capacity here, it is really the strategy that I'm really great at, the vision and the strategy. But from a me perspective, yes, I love more and more this role of just soothing the nerves, regrouping, refocusing, giving courage when it disappears. So I think that over the next 10 years, that's going to be more and more me, just kind of lift them up as they are succeeding.
And I can fully attest to that myself, personally and professionally, your ability to do that. So, and then how do you do this? In what way do you make yourself come through your business to lift and support horse first professionals?
I had done this online work for I've done this since 2004, and there was a period of 5 years where I just stopped. I got so burned out. I did multi-million dollar launches and the shaky knees I never want to feel again. And I hung out with Mustangs and did devote 5 years, which I had asked my husband if I could have 1 year, and it turned into five. And I learned so much about the nervous system, about fear, about overcoming fear, about bravery in the face of fear, that in the end, of course, as we all know, they probably healed a lot more of me than I ever did to them or for them. But today, I think most often I just switch back to that analogy if I get confused. Like, what would the horse do, or what would I do with the horse? How could I be softer, kinder, more consistent in my behavior? Because that's what the horse would ask for me. And I know that our nervous systems are in no way different from theirs. So I think that might be really it, that I more and more just draw from the analogy of what would the horse want, and what would soothe my nervous system.
It's another beautiful example of horses inspiring horse people on so much more than just their riding and their training. I mean, all of us got in thinking as adults, if we got in as adults thinking, oh, I'd love to have rides. I'd love to, you know, all that. And then very, very quickly, we just get swallowed whole by the horse as a beast in every aspect of our lives. And it improves every aspect of our lives. And so, you know, you said Mustangs, but you live in Germany. Just fill that puzzle in for us. You are German, but how did the Mustangs come in?
So I'm born in Germany, and then moved to LA, Los Angeles, when I was 20. It was horribly unhappy, but I had met somebody in Paris who was from LA, and so we started our life there.
How very exotic and romantic, Christiane.
Well, I didn't from know afar, you, it sounded.
I didn't know that you moved to US for love.
Yes, I did.
From someone you met in Paris.
Yep.
And you tell me this only now. That's fantastic.
Yes, yep. I met him when I was 20 in Paris. And so this is kind of a funny story, but it was truly like the cocky American that I fell in love with.
Oh my God.
He had a convertible, and he'd park on sidewalks, and he'd hop out of the car with the door closed, you know, like, yeah.
Right. So, I'm just going to call a Hollywood producer. I think there's a movie in there somewhere. Yeah.
Well, but it started off really, really well. And then he got really homesick. For a Californian, the European weather is really hard to adjust to. It really, you know, it affects their moods. And
unless they move to Spain.
Right. But from like the Northern European stuff. And so he moved back. I was actually a fashion designer in Paris.
Oh, wow.
And it's complete not my kind of a thing, but that's how we started off. So he was a designer. I was a designer. And I moved to LA, worked in the fashion district for a while, was completely unhappy. And the relationship was very difficult. I had come with a lot of crap. He had come with a lot of crap. So I became a psychologist, and in LA, went back to school, which really pretty much at that point destroyed our relationship, because he wanted the designer, not the psychologist. Mm. And well, we still had two children, and 21 years later, I gave it up. It was just not working.
Wow. I didn't know all of this about you.
Yeah, so it was quite amicable, given his personality. It's probably something I'm most proud of, and he now says too. And we raised our children together in LA while I was still pretty unhappy. And yes, horses were just my thing. That's what saved me, because I could get dirty, and it wasn't the LA glam, and you know, it was the real thing. And I remember, so you wanted to know about the Mustangs. I was getting divorced and had given up our high country. We were part of a country club for our horses. I did all the way, you know, Grand Prix dressage, etc. Hated it. Higher I went. And so I got divorced, had no more money, and went. And it was Christmas, and it was all this really crazy commercialism that happens in LA around Christmas. And I said, I need some sanity thing. And I went to the only tax store that was open, and I got one of these magazines or, you know, newspapers that they distribute. And I got a phone number for a barn, and I just called it. And I said, I need to go see and smell and touch a horse. And they were open. And so they let me do that. They let me walk around and pet horses. And I still cry about, you know, from that. And we get to talk. I get to talk to the manager. And I said, if I ever want to re-enter the horse world, it must be by doing something good to animals, to the horses, because I have such guilt about what I did to them in the first 40 years of my life.
Wow.
And he says, well, do you know that this is a Mustang rescue station?
Wow.
And he pulls out this card, and it's like this completely shredded card from having been in his wallet forever. And he says, call this guy. So I call this guy, and he ends up taking me to the first Bureau of Land Management adoption station a week later, and I got my first Mustang.
Is she still with you?
No, unfortunately, he died of cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Cancer. Yeah. Well, it's a long time ago, and it's still.
Of course. It's all right. This is the emotional horsemanship podcast. So if this is what happens, we're on brand, Christiane. Listen.
Yeah.
I have a family member who got out of horses forever, and she was all in. She had the 20 acres, she had the farm, she had the setup, she was doing the riding club, she was doing the whole thing. She had this Clydesdale thoroughbred cross called Echo, and Echo was glorious. And he died at age 12 from thyroid cancer or something like this. Mm-hmm. And she walked away from horses and could never come back, you know?
Yeah.
So you're still in it.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Pie.
Pie. God bless Pie. We love you, Pie.
We do. Yeah. So, it was actually quite glorious because my daughter and I, she was 16. She wanted a Mustang too. So we went to the first and last Mustang makeover auction because I am a sucker at this stuff. Mm-hmm. Ended up paying a lot of money for a huge mane. We called it a $4,000 mane. we ended up going on vacation on the coast of California, and there were these huge steps that were going up and down the mountain, and I think it ripped the cancer in his stomach, and he laid down and had to be put down 2 hours later.
I'm so sorry.
So, long story, he had me hooked, as many Mustang owners will attest to. Mm-hmm. And after that, it got more serious. You know, I like got more into it, got some glorious, beautiful animals, and then met my second husband and realized that I had always issues with fear, that fear had stopped me in so many ways. And so I asked them after I had made a ton of money running 6, 7, and 8 figure online coaching businesses, that I needed a break, and I needed a horse that would show me how to overcome fear. And so we went to a rescue station that has 500 Mustangs, and I got the one that was most scared. That was Maya at the end. I could never get the long name going. And Maya taught me so much, ended up writing a book about it. And she was the first one that really taught me how to face fear, how we are so much like the horses, how our nervous system is wired the same way. Long before this was popular, you know, this was almost 20 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And out of her came a surprise foal that nobody saw, that she was even pregnant. So that there was number two, and then there was number three, because the long mane one, no, you know, my daughter was now 16, had a car, so long mane belonged to me. So they just accumulated. And then when my daughter was 18, we moved to Oregon. But before that, for a year, I worked at a Mustang, at that same Mustang rescue station outside of LA, and just immersed myself into the gentling and the husbandry of wild horses. And it was, wow.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. So we ended up taking 7 to Oregon. And then there was very little riding, kind of like your setup. You know, the arena wasn't that perfect. But it didn't really matter because it was, and my new husband, we met online, and he said his animal spirit was a horse. Well, he was married before I even met him. That was it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we just played with them for 2 years and really learned so much about what's today called ethology. I mean, we didn't really have any names for this. We just lived with them. And they soothed me to a point where now I can solve my own fear problems when they come up for the most part by just remembering how it was to be with them.
It's an amazing story. It's an epic saga, if I can say. I knew you were in America and I knew there was a Mustang storyline, but I'm thank you for being so candid. I really appreciate that. And now I'm starting to join the dots in how you work with professionals because, well, I've worked with you in various forms since 2019. Off again, on again, off again, on again. And I feel like me and my business was like this very, very rough, slightly unhandled, slightly untrained Mustang. And you kind of gentled my business in a way.
Never thought about that, but that's
and
great.
You brought me in and you're like, well, you know, you need a website. So you brushed my mane out, you know, and you're like, you need to like understand that, you know, we can approach you. You gave me booking systems, you know, and you sort of built all of this in and helped me do it. And I never felt like you took control of my business. I never felt like you judged my business or myself. You allowed me to be myself in my work and you allowed my business to be what it is. And you didn't allow any kind of personal whatever overshadow that. It was just exceptionally professional always and giving enough help, but then stepping back and sort of saying, well, now it's up to you to do the work. You're either going to implement it or you're not. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to implement it. And I have.
You have.
And I'll be completely candid with you because you've been candid with me. Your teaching, coaching, and support of me as a professional has completely altered the course of my life. It really, really, really has. Mm-hmm. I'm living my dream in my dream house on my dream property that I get to build from scratch. I'm booked and blessed in my work. I can't keep up with the amount of work that's in front of me. And though I did the work, I would have been dead in the water without the tools, coaching, guidance, support, and frankly, the push from you, because you know exactly when to push someone just enough to piss them off into taking action in a really
threshold,
good way.
The human
which,
threshold.
Which I appreciate, you know, and I was trained in Switzerland as a dancer, and then I worked in Germany for a year. So I understand and really appreciate the German mindset of, you know, order and the approach and all of these things. But you bring in that American aspect to it, which has a lot more freedom and understanding and flexibility.
And compassion,
so,
I hope.
And compassion.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that's since we moved back, and especially in the country. Here in Germany, I've met actually very compassionate people, but that's not how I grew up. That was not my perception. So I am really grateful for the California bubble education that, you know, now I can kind of combine both and be both logical and soft.
Yeah.
I think it's the softness that the horses really taught me more than anything.
Tell me more about that. Lean into that.
So my parents were getting older and my husband had just lost both his parents in 2 weeks time. And we said, we need to go to Germany because I had worked for a hospice in Oregon also. And I said, it's all nice to good to sit with people that I don't know that are dying, but I've left my parents now for 35 years. It's time to go home. And we had these 7 Mustangs, and 2 of them were already perfect candidates to come with us, but there was a 3rd one missing. And so we went back to the BLM in Oregon, and the German Mustang makeover had pre-picked all the ones that had perfect confirmation, suckers. And I also didn't have that year of guardianship anymore because it was less than a year. So I had to get one that's what they call sales authority, somebody in the horse that nobody wants. Mm. And so I got my little mare, and cocky me, after having gentled hundreds of Mustangs, I thought it would be a 2-day job to get her to listen to me and pay attention to me. And so I said, no halter, no lead rope, please. I can do this. I take her home to Oregon, and the ground freezes over, and all of my tools froze with it because I'd only known natural horsemanship, the gentling. And so I started clicker training, gentled her with clicker. And she took 2 months before I could touch her. And that, because she had been at the BLM so long, because nobody wanted her, she had kind of decided that people weren't really her cup of tea. And because most Mustangs, when they're not there that long, they're pretty naive. And if you establish yourself as a kind person, in my experience, it doesn't take that long if you know what you're doing and read the body well. But for her, she had other ideas. And that much patience, I don't think I've ever applied to anything in my life. Mm. And it was very, very cold. I saw pictures with this like big thing on, and you know, and I think that while there was a strategy applied to getting her to trust me, the steps were so small. And you and I, we always talk about lily pads and bringing, you know, maybe a visitor on your website over the lily pads to reaching out to you. The lily pads I needed to use for her were so minute that it really helped me be even more patient and understand where she was coming from and let her enter my world before I could enter her world. And so all that, it's kind of, you know, once you own it in your body, it's a little hard to dissect where things all came from. But I think that she contributed a lot to my coaching style today.
Mm. I'm hearing in that description a lot of personal responsibility, a lot of accountability of the self, a lot of threshold awareness, self-awareness, and these are the parts and pieces, the emotional anatomy of softness that so many people need. A really difficult horse for them to go there, because to go there self-motivated with horses that don't necessarily need it, most people wouldn't. You know, and everyone's got this story of a horse or a situation that demanded that they slow down, take stock, build responsibility, build awareness, let go of any perceived entitlement to the horse's body and their space.
And perceived intentions. Mm-hmm. Our house was on top, she was on below. If only during my walk, I already started to plan what I was going to do.
She was out.
I might as well just turn around and go.
Fascinating. Because there's, in the circles I run in, a lot of people say, oh, your intentions, the horse read your intentions. And, yeah, maybe, but I'm not so sure that that's a great way to train. Some of the worst things in history were done with the best intentions. And your intentions are about you and sometimes have very little to do with the horse. And some horses can feel exceptionally put out by it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, especially at the beginning when they're really wild. We must numb them down a little bit in order to live in our human world and be ridden, etc. But when they first come to you, they are just so attuned that it's a shame not to take advantage of that and learn
something from that. Mm-hmm. So you still have Mustangs now in Germany?
Yeah, we brought 3 of them in the container to Germany.
Gosh, they got on a plane for you. What was that like?
Apparently no big deal. Wow. It's just it became a lot more expensive than we ever thought.
I bet.
They stayed at Monty Roberts for a month of quarantine times 3. That alone kind of broke our budget. and then they have, you know, then they have to be driven to LA and quarantined again, and then they arrive at Amsterdam and yada yada yada. But once they got here, it was like 2 days of jet lag, and then they were fine.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Because I've always been worried about horses who've flown somewhere, but you're saying it wasn't a big deal.
No, the nutritional difference ended up making one of them a summer itch horse. That's the issue.
That's the issue.
I would no longer import Mustangs because
for that reason. And you just got a new horse.
Yep.
Tell us about him.
So the owner of the barn where we're at, wonderful friend, 2 years ago got a Lusitano from a dealer, and he looked horrible, you know, scarred and thin and really didn't like people either. But she had done a really super nice job with him. I eyed him the entire time like, this might be, you know, but nah, she was very attached, and my relationship to her was very important. And so recently she said that she just felt overwhelmed by having three private horses. And so I just raised my hand.
Hello,
again.
I'm over here.
I'm here. And it was the best negotiation I've ever seen in my life, because I offered more than what she wanted. We met in the middle. And yeah. But it's kind of interesting because he reminds me a lot of the Mustangs. In the way that, yeah, it just hurts my heart to think, like, if somebody pushes these type of sensitive horses above threshold regularly, what happens to them and how they cope. So I'm just working really, really slowly with him. Like, I'm pretending almost like he's a wild horse.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't know me, and then he has no reason why he should trust me. And it's just beautiful. Just yesterday, I mean, I think anybody would have watched me would have fallen asleep. There was so little happening, but there was so much happening between us that I came home. I was just, my whole body and mind and heart was gooey. It was so soft. So it was really nice. So who knows what we do with him? It doesn't matter.
In my work, we call that the warm glow.
Yeah.
Oxytocin flooding your system.
Completely.
And if we look at the emotional neuroscience studies and research, oxytocin and that warm glow is the essential first stepping stone and prerequisite to any effective, safe social bonds between any mammal ever. Like, it's got to be there first. I'm now hearing all the parallels between your life as a horsewoman and your life as a coach and a business mentor. I'm seeing all the parallels now, like even more than I ever thought. So it makes complete sense. I wanted to pivot a little bit into horse businesses. So you focus on a specific type of equestrian professional, because with your experience and background, you could have kind of put yourself, led yourself, walked out into almost any equestrian domain that you wanted with your background, your experience, your knowledge. But you've been very, very discerning always about the type of equestrian professional that you want to support. Tell me who they are and why you've been discerning. Let's take a break. Emotional horsemanship is more than just people sitting in a room talking about horses. I'm very, very clear that we can only talk about the things that we do. We can only talk successfully about things that we are able to congruently embody, four-dimensionally, meaning you can talk about it, you can teach it, you can do it, and you can train it with a horse. So if you're enjoying the way that we talk with each other, the way that we explore horses, and the way that we think about them, then you might really enjoy actually doing emotional horsemanship. Because this is more than just nice words, and this is more than just a competition of who can say nice things. This is talking about real, practical realities with horses. You can explore those practical realities through so many different options. The easiest one to start with would be the Emotional Horsemanship Video Library. Can start anytime, stop anytime. You can get a 10% discount for an annual subscription, but if you just want to dip in for 1 month and then dip out again, you're allowed to do that too. There's over 170 videos and counting, with two new videos every single week coming. And this is the most accessible and easily affordable option to begin working with emotional horsemanship and to see the practical reality of the things that we are here talking about. There's everything from lessons with real clients from all over the world, to demonstrations with my own horses, clips from webinars and other podcast interviews, theory tutorials, practical tutorials, so much more. Please go and visit emotionalhorsemanship.com to see the options for the video library. Thank you for being here, and let's return to our conversation with my friend and mentor, Christiane Nowit. You focus on a specific type of equestrian professional, mm-hmm. because with your experience and background, you could have kind of put yourself, led yourself, walked out into almost any equestrian domain that you wanted with your background, your experience, your knowledge. But you've been very, very discerning always about the type of equestrian professional that you want to support. Tell me who they are and why you've been discerning in that manner.
I mean, I think those are people that we call these days horse first, equine pros, but even that is a bit deceiving, because what does that really mean?
Everybody professes that, right?
Mm-hmm. It's from that experience with the Mustangs. It's like you let the genie out of the box. It doesn't go back in. Mm-hmm. So what they've shared with me, sometimes even verbally, but more like just through their beingness, my greatest desire in life from here on out is to be part of this pivot, that we start to deal with horses in a different paradigm, at least in the Western world, where horses are luxury, which we always think about. We are the only horse owners. There are people, that live, survive because some donkey pulls their cart. That's not what I'm talking about. Mm. But us, it's a luxury. And the world is such a mess that, to me, if I can help more horse pros that really want to usher this new paradigm in, have more impact and more financial security, which allows them to have more impact, then I can amplify my own impact. That's really pretty much the short story of it. That's it. More I can help you guys, more horses you help, more people are affected by those horses, and so are their spouses, their children, and society at large. And I just can't imagine any better way to have influence over it, because my idea was, when I was working at the Mustang Rescue, was that would be my path, and that I was just gentling more horses. But in the end, if we talk about a lever, me helping you be more successful is the biggest lever I can have.
Right. Oh my God. Well, thank you for doing that for all of us, because people like me, small-time service providers trying to make a difference in their local environment, who have big ideas and, something unique to offer, we needed someone like you to put your weight behind us. We needed that lever. We needed that gravitas behind us, because I had no idea how to market a business. I've got good instincts, but I had no idea how to market a business, how to have a website that provides services that people understand, or how to have a long-term strategy. I had no idea how to do that. All I knew was horses. All I knew was my trade. And when you're learning your trade, there's no one who sits you down and teaches you all of this stuff. And so this is part of the reason, people ask me all the time, why is the equestrian industry so far behind? Why are problematic practices so pervasive? Well, the people who are perpetuating problematic practices have immense weight, power, gravitas, money behind them. They're exponentially leveraged, and us over here in the dirt don't have no one behind us. And you put your shoulder to the yoke and you stood behind us, and you continue to do so. And you're just one person making a difference, and you will continue. There will be an exponential growth from this. It'll start to go layers upon layers. So
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
And it's just not just me. I mean, the fun part is that, I some magical serendipitous way met two partners that feel the exact same way. So the three of us like complement each other so well. I could never do that on my own.
Shout out to Cerise and Leah. Yes. I love them.
Yeah, we love them so much. And the fun part about all of this is, I mean, I really consider our business, so we are an official startup business, so there's options and all, and so we did this right, but it's also a conscious business. And I worked with a lot of leadership coaches in the past and promoted their businesses.
Such as?
Oh, Tim Kelly, for example, is actually a really big coach who's trying to collaborate on peace in the Middle East.
Wow. Good luck to him.
Yeah. I don't know how he's doing these days. Ooh, a little bit of a couple steps back. But so what was happening was while I was, I'm not necessarily the biggest visionary. I'm a really good strategist. So I would connect with visionaries that didn't know how to organize teams and get things done and fill the center part of it. And so he was one of those amazing people, and he was very clear that he had a team, but the way he ran the business was so conscious and so beautiful and so flat and so collaborative that him and several others taught me how to lead from this, what Mark Rashid might call the passive, you know, leadership or the second mayor leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening in our company. We just realized we were together 3 years. There's never been a bad word, a misunderstanding, or a disagreement because we take our time to find shared purpose before we move forward. And I know that a lot of horse pros struggle because of team building and team management. This is not something we have really talked about yet, but it's very likely something I will offer in the future, which is how do you build this cohesive team so that it's as harmonious as your relationship to your horses?
Wow. I just had my first team meeting for Emotional Horsemanship on Sunday on Zoom. We all sat down together, all of us, and discussed strategy for the year. And I'm sitting there going, I feel like I'm in a twilight zone. Like, how did I go from in the dirt, poor, like painfully poverty stricken in the dirt, €2 in my bank account and feeding my horse somehow, to this position now? And I still feel like the same person. And I think though many people helped me get here, again, I compliment you that you really helped me get there, and that you've allowed me to be myself and still be the same person through all of this change. And it takes huge skill to do that. So like if any equestrian professionals listening, they want help, and you're willing to do what it takes, and you're willing to listen and do the work, highly recommend Horse Biz Automated and Christiane Witt. Highly recommend, because you understand us.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I understand. And that those 5 years, you know, felt like 5 years not working, really working. I mean, making money as a horse pro, I know, is hard, especially at a rescue station. But I understand. We are like the horses, and I think a lot of us are drawn to horses because of our wounds and because of the baggage that life has created, and we're looking for healing. So I guess, you know, I never thought about this. Thank you, Lockie, for this conversation. When you asked, like, who am I really? Who am I aspiring? Is to really become more and more and embody this second mare, this, you know, wise horse that doesn't need to use any force to bring a cohesive herd together. And that would be, yeah, I can't grow out of this. I can't grow old. Oh, this is the nice thing. It makes lemon into lemonade. You know, older I get, better I can be at this. So
I'm hearing a new program called Second Mare Marketing. It's time to register that. That needs to be an LLC. It needs to be a website. Let's buy the domain name, Second Mare Marketing. No, and we're going to get to the segments in a minute and wrap it up. But a lot of the people that I serve, the clients that I serve, they are smart enough to know when they're being sold to. And some of them resent it because they've had often experiences with unscrupulous equestrian professionals who use legitimate marketing techniques with an illegitimate intention to make more money and leverage people and take advantage of people who are in a struggling situation with potentially dangerous horses, and they leverage these potentially inappropriate, potentially abusive practices onto them or take advantage of their finances. I'll give you a very explicit example without naming anyone or outing anyone. But a few years ago, I had a colleague, a friend, also a client, whom was studying and was a protege with a very well-known, very high-profile, very, very, very skilled equestrian professional. And this equestrian professional, they have mini courses that are about 3 hours long, which cost over 800 euros. So this is the price point they're selling. Their main courses are somewhere between 3,000 to 4,000 euros for just a regular course. For a retreat, it's a five-figure retreat, etc. So it goes on and on. And this professional puts out several of these courses a year. So you've got to have really deep pockets to collaborate with them. This person put out a new course at the beginning of COVID, and it wasn't even a new course. What they did was take samples from their existing stuff and pull it together and say, this is your COVID recipe. We're going to get through pandemic, you know, keep your whatever. And this client of mine who was shared a client with them wrote to me and said, I can't afford this $800 rehashed course because I've just lost my job during COVID. Mm-hmm. How can I apologize to this professional for not joining their new course? And I went, oh, we have drunk the Kool-Aid. I had to say, this is an inappropriate relationship. And I think we've all been there. All of us have maybe tasted a horse training cult at one point or another. And so the people I work with are often just like a traumatized horse. You have to approach slowly. And if you come on too strong with your rope swinging like a good marketer, they say, ah, oh, bugger off. I don't want anything to do with you. I know what that is. But they don't know that my intentions are different. Mm-hmm. So how do you reconcile that with marketing tropes? How do you help professionals find sensitive, authentic, intentional ways to market that don't feel like they're being sold like by a slimy haired snake oil salesman? Mm-hmm. How do we navigate that?
Well, I was thinking, hadn't thought about this for a while because it's just so like what we do. So I don't quite often think about it, but I think it always helps me again come back to the horses, right? Mm. So a lot of trainers are at a level of mechanically being good at something. They can know how to twirl the rope, they, you know, all of that. And the horse will comply, but the horse doesn't buy in, right? Mm. So it's different. Some people, some pros, start to have what we call the feel, the sensitivity to use the same tools, but in a way that there is a shared purpose being created, that it makes it so that the horse chooses to participate, that the horse, what I just heard you say is that the person lost some sovereignty.
Yes. Right?
Toppled off her or his center. And so that's the thing with horses, right? If we use the right techniques, and that's kind of what happened when I did natural horsemanship to gentle horses, bang, 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 like a factory, did I get one after the other gentled. But it was mechanical, right? Then you add the feel and you add, and like what you're teaching, the emotional aspect to it, and you understand what hormones are being produced by what action, because that's what NLP is. So right. In marketing, a lot of people talk about NLP. That's all it is. It's really manipulating
neuro-linguistic programming. Yes, right? Audio-visual kinesthetic. Yep.
It's just manipulation. And so either manipulate the horse into submission, or you use those tools to create consent. So I think it's the same with marketing, right? You use the same, we teach the same tools as what the big seven-figure marketers teach, but hopefully allow you to see that if true intention comes through and you're patient and you stay detached of outcome and you know, you approach the corral without a particular agenda, then the horse will buy into it and will want to be with you and ultimately will prefer you over grass sometimes. And so that's kind of, I think, the only answer I really have, because you have to put some feel into your marketing.
You have to put feel in marketing with feel. That's the next LLC. That's the next online course. We're going to register that domain. Yeah, well done.
But it's really about using the strategy. Don't throw the strategies out, the baby with the bathwater. I think a lot of people do that. Like, I hate marketing. I hear this so much. Mm. What do you really hate is being manipulated.
Right.
That feels yucky, and so does the horse. Would say the same thing, you know. I hate your rope throwing, twirling strategies. But when you allow the horse to come into your space and feel really safe in your space, and you are a true solution to that horse's problem, horses don't have an issue joining us, right? So it's the same with marketing. If I come through with true intention and I give the person time to make decisions without pressure, but when they're ready, below their threshold of stress, without manipulation, and I can show myself as the true solution, then I think marketing is actually a really nice thing.
You know, and this is absolutely spot on in my view, because we can still use and we should still use the same tools. I think it's, I'm going to just tell myself now, I think it's really toxic and inappropriate for some of my colleagues to be anti-marketing. And often these colleagues are successful. They've got financial security. They've got their barns. They've got their string of clients. And then they'll sit there on this place of privilege and say, oh, marketing's toxic. And they'll have this like anti-guru, anti-toxic, anti-marketing point of view. And then they'll spread this and kind of shame professionals who are using marketing tools to get themselves out there. And I'm thinking, don't you realize that this marketing tool is the one thing I've got that is separating me from the street? Don't you realize that I'm fighting for financial security and trying to lift my family out of a poverty cycle by doing good work? How dare you shame people for using marketing tools to get there? It would be like tying people's hands behind their back and saying, go out there and gentle a horse. You can't. You need to allow people to do things. You need to allow people to use things and maybe even overmarket themselves once. Say, well, that didn't work. Then undersell sometimes.
Who hasn't been gone over threshold with their horse sometimes? It's very hard to read, you know, your partner. So it's the same thing. But I think you're also talking about the initial stage of marketing, the actual lead attraction, right? Once a client and I hope we might have a little bit more time to talk about the model that I think is important for somebody to thrive in a horse business.
Tell us that. Tell us the model for thriving in a horse business.
Because then you have actually much more internal marketing, which is much easier than bringing new people in all the time.
Right.
So the way we look at it is that if your business sits on three pillars, high-end one-on-one clients, clinics or groups, and then supplemented by online courses, just like you do, then it's a very stable chair, right? One tops a little bit, you lose a client over here, it's no big deal. And ultimately, your online courses are anyway the way that keeps you, you know,
floating.
So that means that you attract people in the front end, but you have lots of offers and you see that now. You don't have to attract that many new people. You just keep on recommending new solutions to the same people.
Yeah, supporting the same people. That's what I realized over Christmas, because I was starting to have a problem dealing with the saturation of the influx of people who wanted to collaborate and wanted to work with me. And I was like, hang on a minute, but I got all these people over here who I've already invested a lot of time and energy into training. So I'm going to create inner circles for you and take care of you this year.
Right.
Stick with me and I'm going to make it affordable for you. I'm going to give you high value. And that's what I'm really going to focus on. And then, you know, lead generation is more passive, but then it's also more sustainable. You see, until I've got like coaches who can help me scale services, that's kind of where I need to be. I've also, and we're about to wrap up in a minute, but it takes a lot of responsibility in my experience so far as a equestrian professional to treat your clients in an appropriate manner and to make sure that they are okay as they travel through your business and through your services, because I've had very explicit situations, specific situations rather, where a client walks in and basically puts themselves on the table to be filleted by the professional. Just like they just say, I am completely subjugated to you. And it's like, no, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I've actually said, this is exact verbiage I've said to clients more than once, your personal autonomy is very important to me. I will not make that decision for you. I will not tell you how to spend your money. These are the options. I can describe the pros and cons of the options for you, but it is not my place to manipulate you into where you spend your money. Even when they put themselves in a silver platter right in front of me, and I thought, ooh, there would be a lot of people out there who couldn't resist telling people, go spend that over here right now. There'd be a lot of people who just, because it would be under the cloak of darkness. No, they would never be held accountable for it. And I thought, okay, now I understand how some big time trainers and big systems of training went astray, because it starts with that very, very small decision, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is tempting, right? I get sometimes get people in the same way, like, I don't know what to do. So
fix me.
And yeah, but ultimately owning a business and training horses have so much in common. You know, you have to be personally responsible. You have to grow as a person. You have to be dependable to yourself. So the horse sees you as dependable and the business sees you as dependable. We talk about this a lot, you know, when we're in coaching together is you have to do things that make you trust yourself, not hand it over to somebody else.
Ah, I see. Self-trust first, so then you can extend real trust to others. Yes, beautiful. All right, Christiane. Well, I'm going to take you through my fun little ridiculous segments to finish. So there's a steaming pile of horse something in the corner of a stable in the equestrian industry. What is something that makes you say, what the muck, and how would you muck it out of the equestrian industry?
And you do that to me like spontaneous.
Yes.
There's so many mucky corners.
There's so many mucky corners. Pick one. What would be the first one today?
You know, we could get big and we could talk about all the, you know, abusive stuff that happens. But I think I'm going to go and talk what you were talking about, is that the mucky corner is staying hidden instead of having the courage to stand up and promote your material in a way that is authentic and real and makes a bigger difference.
Oh, I just got goosebumps. Thank you for that. I mean, 100%. I used to dream about being invisible. Like, I used to have waking daydreams and night dreams where I would dream about being in the world and no one could see me. And I thought, I would love that no one knew who I was, and that I could serve people and work with horses and make a living and be completely invisible and like no pressures. But then I thought, that is so selfish to make my life only for me. And I need to let go of that selfish control of my identity and allow myself to be a person in the public, in the light, and allow my life to be something of value to people other than myself. And that's been a very, very conscious decision as a deeply introverted, very, very private person to stretch myself and say, okay, I will make myself available. Please don't throw too many tomatoes at me, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we all dream about that. It feels safe. And that I think was my whole book was about that, was like, how could I actually step out? Because my very lucrative role was in the background, right? And like how could you gradually convince your nervous system to let you step out a little bit more? And it has to be a gradual step. Like you worked on yourself. But if people just take teeny little steps and see that it's not actually that dangerous, but it can bring so many financial and value and value to the horse world, then mm-hmm. we horse first people can step out and
claim their space.
Move the paradigm.
And that's perfect move into our next little segment. The tides of change. The equestrian industry is undergoing a sweeping paradigm shift. How do you contribute towards the tides of change in the industry?
I think we talked about it a little bit mm-hmm. by encouraging yes. those to step out. So do the inner game of success as well as the strategies that it actually takes. Help people build. COVID has created a lot of pain, but the whole online course explosion, let's keep it up and let's make them better. And let's create curriculum that people can actually follow through and finish, which is a decimal issue, really horrible issue with most people not finishing the courses they purchase. And through that, actually affect the entire world so much faster than you could ever do in person, including clinics. So that's kind of, and learn how to market it, which is a whole other skill. So I think that's where we could really, if we were more online and good online, not with some crap stuff, that I videoed somewhere 10 years ago, but really start to think on how the adult learner absorbs information, then I think we could really, really make a bigger difference.
Amazing. Amazing. And to finish, take me home, Christiane. What is home for you? What is home for you? Specifically around horses, but what is home for you?
So after these 35 years in the States, I had the courage to come back to a country that has hurt me significantly when I was little. But I avoided the cities, and we live in a little town of 144 people, in a little half-timbered farmhouse, completely imperfect. There's no one line straight in this house. And
that's home for you. Your little slice of heaven in Germany.
Yeah, it's like the 1950s here. And I know it's a little bit of escapism because it's so safe here and it feels... people are so open and fun and down to earth and real. It has really been coming home. And if you had asked me 20 years ago, I would have said, hell no, every area in the world, but not Germany. So I think I healed my German wounds, and it feels very good to be here.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Christiane. If thank people you. Want to find you, reach out to you, find your book, your services, your business, your offerings, tell us where we can find you.
Well, the official way is to go to horsebizautomated.com, check out the four stages of business, assess yourself a little bit yourself, and then reach out to us, book an appointment, and we'll just start chatting. As you know, I don't do yes. hard sells. It's,
nope.
it's a consultation, and if something fits, it fits. If not, I'll find you something that fits for you. And if it's unofficial, just DM me on Facebook. That's it.
Christiane Witt, thank you so much for being here. I couldn't think about someone I would love more to have in the first season than you.
And, aww.
I'm blessed to have your guidance and support every week, all year. So I look forward to seeing you every Wednesday.
That's right.
And have a lovely rest of your day.
Bye, Lockie.
Bye. There we go. You've been listening to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips, and that was our guest, Christiane Witt, a master strategist, marketing professional, and mentor to Horse First equestrian professionals. If you'd like to connect with Christiane, please see her information in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you can listen to new episodes every week with people like Christiane, and also community podcasts and solo podcasts, all of which take a lean towards the educational. Thank you for being here. If you'd like to learn more about emotional horsemanship, please go to emotionalhorsemanship.com, and I'll see you next time.